This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hey guys, brand new podcast, and this one is it's pretty fascinating in my opinion. I did a show with a gentleman named Matteo Lane, who you'll hear on this podcast, called The Goddamn Comedy Jam. If you don't know anything about The Goddamn Comedy Jam, then you haven't been goddamn listening. It's a show I really love doing. It's the show I ended up doing with Scott Stapp. That episode will air April 19th. Matteo did it. Matteo's performance was beyond amazing. It really was. And I knew that, but then I worked with him the other night, and it was even fucking more amazing. Me and Dane Cook, and you'll hear this in the podcast, sat in the back and were fucking just blown away. The thing I found really fascinating about Matteo is obviously openly gay. You'll hear that in a few seconds. If you don't know he's gay, then you might be deaf in one or both of your ears. But he talks about it on stage and he owns it. And it's a different perspective than I've ever really had on the podcast. I've had gay men on the podcast before, but never someone who's so out and open and young and this new culture. I had a run in with two friends. We'll talk about this again. I won't say their names, who were saying that they let dudes suck their dicks, and it caught me off guard. I did not know that was like a legit thing. I'm a tad bit old school, I guess, and so I ran into Matteo that night after the conversation, and Matteo I think was a little shocked too. But we had a cool conversation and we were like, we should podcast and talk about this because, look, society's changing. If you're fucking 44 like me, and keep your eyes open. And what transpires is just a very fascinating conversation, in my opinion. And I know I'm a good judge of what you guys enjoy. This you will really enjoy. A fascinating conversation about what it's like growing up gay, what it's like coming out, what it's like dating, what it's like everything. And we talk about what it's like being straight and what it's like getting bullied and what it's just a really fucking moving hour and a half conversation that I believe is important. Look, if this podcast, you know, Duncan Trussell's a long time ago told me, if you're not growing in your podcast, then you're not growing as a man. I was like, that's a pretty insightful thing. We talked about a few late night comedy hosts and he was like, yeah, like they never really got to grow. And that's fucking fascinating. So anyway, that is today's podcast is just eye opening. And I'm telling you, it is nothing short of fascinating. You will listen to this podcast and go, man, I know they're talking about sucking dicks, but I can't turn it off. I say they because Matteo showed up with his what I can assume only is his best friend, a really close friend, a guy who's got a very popular podcast on his own. It's called PNS Explosion. By the way, I just Googled. I tried to find his name's Pat Powers, but I couldn't remember his name from the introduction. His last name, I knew his name was Patrick, but he adds so much to this conversation because he's 43. Check out his podcast if you're very open-minded. I'm certain if you're not open-minded, you probably won't get a bunch of it. I will tell you, they had a shorthand between each other that at times I got lost in. Like, there were impressions that Matteo would do, and I'd be like, huh? But by the way, it's not just the gay stuff that's fascinating in here. Matteo's Italian-Mexican, and he grew up on a street with 19 of his family members, like 19 families of his. So this is just a really cool fucking podcast. That's all I'll say. But Patrick Powers has his podcast, PNS Explosion, and we're both the same age. He grew up in Omaha. You'll find that out. I'll be in Omaha the 31st and 1st. Those shows, I think, are sold out. I know they're sold out. I'm certain of that. I had this phone call today. What I meant to say is I think we're adding a third show on one of the nights. because that's next week, not this weekend. I'm home and I'm taking care of my body, because if you've seen me on the road these last 3 weeks, you know I've been going a little irresponsibly. Wise Guys Salt Lake City on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of April. Those shows are selling out quickly as well, so I would get on those tickets. A show that is not selling out pretty quickly is Stand Up Huntsville. I'm kidding. A third of it, it's a third sold out. So a month out, that's not bad at all. But I know this is a brand new club to the market. So if you're in Alabama, I've never been to Alabama to do stand up, but check out Stand Up Huntsville. Wild West Comedy Festival is the very next day, next 2-3 days. I know I'll be there. I know Ari will be there. I know Doug Benson will be there. Judd Apatow will be there. I'm going to talk about Dave Chappelle's special in a second, so don't go anywhere. Yuck Yucks Calgary the weekend after that. Detroit, May 4th in the Crowfoot Ballroom. I don't know what ticket sales are like there, but it's a smaller room, and I think we'll end up adding a show, hopefully. But get your tickets. Right now we don't have a show added, so get your tickets. Get your tickets, and then we'll add it. You know what I mean. Cincinnati Funny Bone, the 5th and 6th of May. And then Crapshoot Comedy Festival, the 19th of May. I don't know if Doug Stanhope's mentioned it, but me and him are doing something together on the 20th of May. I didn't mean to announce that, but I'm sure it's going to sell out. I'm sure he won't announce it, but I'm not going to tell you where. Hit up Doug Stanhope. He'll tell you. Cobb's Comedy Club, the 9th, 10th of June, and then Sacramento, the Punchline on the 11th. I know Sacramento is a place I started. I know I got a lot of Rogan fans more, but a lot of people that I know hit me up. I know the Fight Game's sick up there. And then those are the dates. Kansas City, Orlando, Cherokee Casino, Columbus Funny Bone, Isla's Birthday, Pittsburgh Improv, Hilarities Cleveland, Houston Improv, Stand Up Live Phoenix, Addison Improv, Helium Philadelphia, St. Louis Helium, DC Improv, Tacoma Comedy Club, The Comic Strip Edmonton, Chicago, Magoobies. Oop, I should not have said that. Yuki. House of Bloomington Comedy. I saw Dave Chappelle's hour special. I will say I had lowered my expectations because I know he's not in the clubs like he used to be, which is, you know, despite common belief that Dave Chappelle is a god, he's not. He's just a dude. I ran into him in Dayton, Ohio, when Doc was running the club. I was getting paid out. If you haven't heard this story, listen for a sec. And Dave Chappelle walked in, and he had his backpack on. He had ridden his motorcycle up. I think he was smoking a cigarette. And I remember thinking, who's this dude smoking a fucking cigarette? He didn't have hair. He had shaved his head. And so it would be better on the story if I said he had a motorcycle helmet on. But anyway, smoking a cigarette inside his motorcycle helmet. But anyway, it was really interesting. I saw him, and I got caught off guard. And I remember analogizing it that it was like seeing a great white shark. Dave Chappelle's so – he's been such a standard of comedy gold for so long. It caught me off guard. But what caught me off guard even more is we had a very quick, candid conversation about writing material. And he was saying, I can't write. I got nothing to talk about. I don't know what to talk about. And he was just being real. And I remember in that moment realizing, oh, shit, man, he's just a comic. He's not he's not the fucking inherent savior to our art form. He is just a dude trying to write some jokes that he thinks are funny. And he knows that he's got an expectation to deliver. And that expectation can sometimes be overweighing. It can sometimes make life a little unmanageable. And I think that's probably at times why he bailed from the limelight. And it's got to be tough to deal with to come back. And I think for the most part, all of us will tell you that if you got that expectation, if you're just in the clubs every single night, that expectation and that weight lowers. And I knew going into this special, I knew that, and I thought that. And I would say to people, don't make it into something it could never be. Like when people would be like, what do you think about Attell or Chappelle? What do you think about Rock? What do you think about Louis? What do you think about Seinfeld? All these guys that Netflix signed deals with for $60 million. I was like, hey, you didn't pay $60 million, so don't go in expecting $60 million worth of entertainment. Just expect that $60 million worth of people will show up and see it. That's all that, that's all, but it's just going to be a good special. That's all. Just look for that. And so I watched it this morning on my cell phone. I started watching it on my cell phone because I was like, I was taking a shit and I was like, I wonder if it's released yet. I know it's coming around the corner. I know, Jim Norton's Mouthful of Shame was last week. And man, I didn't expect much from Jim's and it fucking blew me out of the water. And I was like, that's the way everyone should go into this special for Chappelle for. I started it on the toilet. I was taking a shit. I'm having some stomach problems, with my green juices. And I will say this, I ended up watching it all on my cell phone because it was so good. I couldn't fucking turn it off. It was so good. He's so talented in being funny without trying. You know, obviously I know he's tried. I know that he's put the work into this special, but he's got such an ability to flippantly say something in the middle of a story and it's the way he says it and the way it is just rolls out in the middle and unexpectedly. And that's what I love about great comedy. It was when it's unexpected, but the way he says it is so fucking good. And the topics he tackles in this special and the approach he does, it blew me away. I've been talking about it all fucking day. And I don't think there's one of you that won't watch his special, but I will say, you can keep your expectations up there because it's that fucking good. His last bit about him and Kevin Hart. Oh man, that storytelling, the way he told that story, the way he delivered his character to you and the package with which it was delivered and it's a great fucking special. So that's all. That's my review. Best line in the whole thing. I can't even say it. It had me laughing so fucking hard. It was awesome. It was really awesome. And the best part is it inspired me to write. There's been a thing I've learned about stand-up a tad bit where I figured out that if the better the end of the story, and this is like so simple, why don't we all fucking know this? And I do this, so why didn't I notice I was doing it? But the better the end of the story, the better the story. If The Usual Suspects is an interesting woven story, but it's only so interesting in that you get to hear the ending and go back in your head and relive other parts of it. And there's a story I've been working on about being the first person jumping off the stratosphere that it just was too long. And I was like, don't fucking worry about the middle part. Worry about the ending. The ending's the best part of that fucking story. It's the best part of that story. Just that, know the ending's good. Stick on the ending and then just tell the necessary parts to get to the ending. He's so good at telling a fucking story, it inspired me. And I've heard Rogan say that about him, but it just inspired me. So I know Dave's a big fan of my podcast. He like texts me all the time. He's like, yo, B, you just so dope, son. I know, I'm kidding. Dave doesn't listen to this. I sold that so well that in the middle I was like, yeah, I don't have to take acting classes. Fuck that. I was just fucking rolling dolo. Teaser. And so, but yeah, check out Dave Chappelle's hour special. And today's episode is brought to you by Comedy Central's The Comedy Jam, premiering March 22nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Comedy Central. This show is absolutely fantastic, and yours truly is on it April 19th. Chris Hardwick, Awakawa Fina, I don't know who that is, Jim Brewer, Mark Duplass, who wrote a really nice article in the Huffington Post today. You might check it out. It's about him being a libtard and Trump. By the way, I'm not selling this article right. It's a really good article. Just go read it. Jesse Tyler Ferguson, I think he is the guy from Modern Family. Taryn Manning, who Isla met, and they connected on having sweaty hands. Hasan Minhaj, Richie Sambora, who, by the way, dated a chick that I dated. Isn't that crazy? Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. Is there another Chester Bennington? They wrote Chester Bennington of Linkin Park. Oh, DMX is in it. Jay Farrow's in it. Tia Carrera's in it. Montel Jordan, Kenny Loggins. Basically what it is, us comics go up. We tell a funny story about our favorite song or a song that's meaningful. Scott Stapp is in it. That's who I end up performing with on April 19th. I shouldn't have said that out loud. I should have let you see it live, but he was such a cool fucking dude. Tiffany Haddish steals the show. Her and my guest today steal the show. And that is why he's here, ladies and gentlemen, because I want you to all to watch the Comedy Jam. All my friends are in it. It is such a great fucking show. And today's guest murders it. Fucking murders it. Put your hands together from the PNS Explosion podcast, Patrick Powers and stand-up comedian, opera singer, and a multi-talented comedian, Matteo Lane.
This is
all right. That's my wife for you.
And they lay eggs and everything?
Oh yeah, that's, yeah, they're fucking, the
so,
eggs
so
are phenomenal.
No, because they just,
no, because if they lay eggs, so basically the eggs are their period. Mm-hmm. That's, we figured that out talking to my daughters the other day, and abruptly one of my daughters stopped eating eggs immediately. She was like, we're eating their periods.
Oh no.
And so I guess ultimately if there was a rooster, they would fertilize the egg. And then you'd have baby chicks.
Right.
But right now, nothing comes out. But what's great is they do double yolks. So sometimes you'll get double yolks.
Wow. Which, I always get weary of the double. We're not recording.
Yeah, of course we are.
Oh, I always get weary of the double yolks. Every time I get it, I think, well, I'm getting cancer from this.
Oh.
So I make sure to not.
I just had shrimp last night, and someone told me there was a vein underneath the shrimp.
What do you mean?
There was underneath, like normally I devein a shrimp from the top on the back,
mm-hmm.
but they were pulling out this literally fluorescent blue vein on the base, on the bottom of the shrimp.
I stay away from seafood.
Oh, no. Fucking disgusting. I mean, but so anyway, I murdered it. I love seafood.
I hate seafood.
Really?
Yeah, that's not even a gay joke. I just don't like it. I don't like I don't like fish. I don't. I do like fish.
No, I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, that's right.
Are
you eat any fish?
I don't eat any fish. I know meat.
Yum.
Except for cock.
When did you become a vegetarian?
96.
How really? Old were you then?
20-ish. I was at a friend's house and the dad kept serving us meat dish after meat dish and I just had it. Bacon and sausage and I thought, you know what? I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
Really?
How do you get your meat supplement?
I don't. I'm probably disintegrating on the inside. Tofu, beans.
Okay. I've been going hardcore like paleo lately. Like just having just steak, just any meat and
like really raw vegetables.
Like hardcore. And then I'm making sure that we're all recording. Talk in your mic again.
Hello.
Yeah, you sound great. Talking yours.
Hi.
Yeah, we all sound fantastic.
Oh good.
I do, but then I do kale shakes. Like I do a really aggressive kale shake.
I need to be doing that. I don't have any green anything.
Let me tell you, it's so easy. What I do is I take two stalks of celery, half a cucumber, a full green apple, and then as much kale as I can cram in there.
This is so LA.
And
we're talking about kale in a nice back house with chickens outside and a dog resting on a couch.
The number one partier in the USA, and now you're talking like this.
So that's how I maintain my partying.
Okay,
I still fucking party, let me tell you.
You partied like people like lift weights, like you take care of yourself to party.
I take, yeah. I take care, I swear to God, like I'm on recovery right now because I've been partying very hard these last 2 days.
Yeah.
Like really bad
recovery, as in like you're just joining AA for the week and then no, you go back.
It would be like a starters AA. Like it sounds really crazy, but like I have a regiment. So like today, I had coffee. I worked out this morning, but I mean I was like, I didn't sleep. So I do this thing called a call and sick to work show where I do a show in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I go do press, then go to the club at like noon, and everyone calls in sick to work and put their hardcore drinking shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone starts, they get to the club at like 9. Everyone starts drinking at 9.
9 a.m.?
9 a.m.
9 a.m.?
Yeah.
I do
yeah.
love day drinking.
It's my favorite thing in the world.
I just love it.
I love day drinking more than I like any drinking at all.
And people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's the best. Yeah. I just did my St. Patty's Day one, and it's It's massive. It's, you know, 410 people, I think, showed up, sold out. It's a Columbus Funny Bone, and they start drinking at 9, and we didn't stop drinking until – I didn't stop drinking until, like, 2 in the morning with Jay Farrow.
God.
Yeah, and so – and so then, but then I had to get on a plane and go to a college, and I was shaky.
I would hope so. I mean, if at least, you know.
I had a bottle of Jameson, like, nursed a bottle of Jameson.
That's my
college
drink, by the way. Not a bottle of Jameson, just Jameson on the rocks. Oh. If I've actually stopped drinking. Not stopped completely, but I've gone from, like, maybe a drink once a month.
Gay dudes always partied 10 times harder than fucking straight dudes.
But I don't think I was ever the gay guy that ever.
I loved like New York when you'd get like there's a stereotype of like a young couch surfing gay guy whose clothes look messy but he still looks hot type shit. You know what I'm talking about? And he's always can get cocaine.
Did you ever go to circuit parties or anything?
I didn't. No, because I like to day drink. I like to drink to the, you know, like, and be in bed early. So
the fuck was that?
Electricity.
It just scared the shit out of me.
It was like a power surge.
Yeah, power surge.
But yeah, circuit parties are too late. You know, like,
What's a circuit party?
You define it better.
Oh,
my God, because I've never been to one.
I mean, they're
it's
just...
guys with other shirts on. They're drinking just water because they probably have taken E and done Coke. And it's a pulsating loud music and tight bodies. And if you have a shred of self-esteem, you lose them pretty quickly at these events. So that's why I also stay away from them. Because I like to drink and have fun and laugh and not be caught up in that. But they're more focused on their bodies. I mean, he'd fit in perfectly at a
I went to my first, I guess it was a circuit party in New York. It was this, I was dating a soul cycle instructor. Didn't work. I pretended to like it, but everybody was doing not E, but G or something. G is like a drop.
GHB?
Sure.
It's like a liquid?
Yeah, they kept dropping into drinks and stuff. And I literally was like on a rum and diet thinking like, who am I going to make out with? You know, and it was just, I don't like it. I like to be at a diner late at night and talking.
Yeah.
I'm just the kind of guy, I'm like a 70-year-old gay man. I love opera, Judy Garland, Streisand. I never was able to get into that.
How did certain divas kind of become
gay icons?
Yeah, why is that?
A couple of things. One, I think that gay men were not represented in society for so long that we looked to the next closest thing to see ourselves as representation. And so I think a lot of times gay men sort of have a relationship or feel related to women because women are oppressed, but there's a masculine and a feminine quality in a lot of these women, like, and almost that, like, I think Patrick, you said it too, that we could mimic it, like with Liza and Barbara. I mean, they're kind of women who are sort of out of the mold.
They're like drag. They're already in. They're sort of, even though they're women, they're in drag,
right?
With the makeup and the costumes and the larger than life personas
and the singing.
That's just Liza.
And I remember.
Do you know Liza Minnelli?
I do, but yeah.
The daughter of Judy Garland. And I remember.
Oh, that's a good impression.
Thank you. But the first time I saw a performer as me, I remember turning to a friend and saying, I don't do that. And he said, you do.
For all my meathead fans right now, she was an Arthur.
she was great in Arthur.
In Cabaret, and I was also the daughter of Vincent Minnelli, a wonderful MGM director, and who met my mother on Meet Me St. Louis.
You seem like you have a large population of straight listeners. Male.
So they don't know what I'm doing.
No. Well, you know what's so funny is I don't know who my listeners are. Because a lot of times I'll meet, like...
You probably have a lot of gay listeners.
Especially with that video of you with your shirt off.
Yeah.
I got...
Like, Stern has a lot of gay listeners. Like, gay people tend to go towards people who... I don't know, gays like...
I love Stern.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know if we speak for the gay population, but we like people that kind of tell people to fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so... It's so funny. We were talking about this the other night. I just found out I have, like, a couple friends who legit let dudes suck their dicks.
Straight guys?
Straight guys. And I was like...
Do you have addresses?
I'll tell you off mic who it is. Yeah. And I would love...
Do I know these people?
Yeah. Very well.
You're going to do a high. We're going to do a high. It's a little early for him to do that range, but
how okay.
I see. I grew up in a very different age. Like I grew up when bisexual was not a real thing.
And it's still not.
Is it not?
Because
like, my friends are saying they're just bisexual, and
no,
I was like,
teasing.
No, because I literally, when I was a kid, I was like, I made a joke about this on stage. If you put 10% of a dick in your mouth, you're 100% gay. Mm. There was no sliding scale, but it was also not acceptable at all to be gay. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, when I'm 44,
I'm 43.
Okay, so where did you grow up?
Omaha, Nebraska.
So you know exactly what the fuck I'm talking about.
I do.
And
Biden didn't exist then, because if you liked dick, you liked dick.
Yeah.
If you took one cock, you're a cocksucker. You know. But now I do think people are a little more fluid. Women have been allowed it with the just where even if they're not sexual, they're allowed to touch and be intimate and dance, and no one freaks out. Men, you weren't even allowed that, even if it wasn't a gay thing. But now I think men do kind of want to. Some men want to experiment more with men, but yeah. They're not necessarily gay, and I'd like their phone numbers.
So you're 43, you grew up in Omaha. By the way, I apologize if anything I say comes off offensive. It's just questions.
Trust me, if you listen to his podcast, how long have you been doing your podcast?
12 years.
What's the name of your podcast?
PNS Explosion. I got
they have
perfect
said,
diction there.
There's nothing you've said that's more offensive than what they've gone into on their podcast. Trust.
I love it. Yeah,
this is not,
and
this is tepid
game,
compared
he's
to.
For anything too.
I don't think I can offend Mateo, but I just, know. Yeah. Well, as comics, comics have like a across the board, like, you're not, like, there's nothing you can say to offend me.
I went to a drag show last night, and Lady Bunny, this is her joke, not mine. This is one of her jokes. So I was raping this girl, and she said, "Think of the children." And I said, "You kinky bitch." Everyone's like, ah, like clapping, losing their mind. That's Lady Bunny, by the way. But sorry, go on. Nebraska. Yeah.
So you're going to ask me
So when did you start sounding gay? Because I, listening to you, I go, I was the same.
I mean, when I probably squeezed out of my mother's muffin. I mean,
really?
Probably pretty early on, yeah, I would imagine. I mean, once you get past like two or three where everybody sounds like a baby, I have memories of like people early on even like calling me a woman. Like a girl. Like they call me a woman, but like getting confused by my voice.
Yeah.
They thought you were Mary. Your mother?
My mother.
His dead mother.
But yes. No, they thought I was... I probably very early. Probably like 4 or 5.
Really?
Yeah.
And so when did you know you were gay?
Like the truest sense of it, probably not until high school. Because I just thought what I was feeling was what everybody else was feeling. But then I realized that people weren't... You know, I just thought, oh, everybody must be like wanting to suck the, you know, Jeff or Mike's cock. you know, like playing on the soccer field, and then I was like, oh, I don't think anybody else wants to do this. You know, so
I think I knew since I was like 4, 5. Honestly, that's one of my earliest. So I don't even think any kid can really think of anything in
early
sexualized terms. But I think knowing that I was definitely different for sure.
I definitely would look at Vogue magazines because that was all we had in the bathrooms, and I would get a longing depression. Thinking I may never get a woman that beautiful in my life.
How old were you?
Probably maybe 10. I don't know, but like I knew my sexuality. It's so funny. I don't think a lot of straight people try to identify when they figured out they were straight.
Well, because they're living in a society that already caters to those feelings.
But I had a girlfriend who turned out to be gay.
I'm a lesbian.
I dated like 3 chicks that all went gay after me.
Well, you do give off a good lesbian vibe. That's probably why.
They might think you are a lesbian.
Yeah,
I am lesbian fluid. I connect with lesbians really well.
My wife and I make our own water.
Yeah, they're just such a lesbian. Hi, lesbians.
You know what's so funny? I had this Lyft driver the other day when I was leaving drinks with you was asking me questions, and he was really rude, and I kept telling him, how rude he was. I mean, he would say something. He was like, "Oh, how much?" I said I was an illustrator. I never tell people I'm a comedian. But he's like, "What do you do for a living?" And I was like,
"You
told him
you were an illustrator."
I was. Oh, but so before I did stand-up.
He once was an illustrator.
Yeah, before I was
okay.
stand-up.
I was like, "What an odd choice."
I know. I realized how
I'm an
strange
illustrator.
That
based
sounds.
In, based in reality.
Based,
just so
yeah,
you can,
that makes
no,
sense.
But
that makes
you're
sense.
Right. If I didn't ever, you're right. If you didn't, to me it sounds normal. But to anybody else, like faggot. But I illustrated TV commercials and fashion ads for years. I was a storyboard artist.
Really?
So when I started doing comedy, I learned very quickly, don't tell people to do comedy. You tell people you're an illustrator. They have very few questions. But anyway, so this guy kept asking me questions, and he was like, oh, like, how much do you make? And I was like, that's a rude question, and you shouldn't ask people that. Just FYI. I mean, I gave him one star.
But you'll tell us afterwards.
But I'll tell you afterwards. And so then he goes, okay. He said he was asking me about, like, a woman. And I said, oh, I wouldn't know I'm gay. And he goes, well, when did you find out you were gay? And I said, when did you find out you were straight? And he goes, I guess I always knew. I said, then you just answered your own question.
Good answer.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah, because it's this it is
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, the Bugaloos, and Dinah Girl and Electra Woman.
Yes. You felt things.
I still to this day, by the way, I started really figuring out parts of my sexuality in that like it sounds silly, but there's this stuff called quicksand porn. And when I was a kid, the superhero girls would get caught in quicksand, and it would turn me on. And like they'd get tied up, and they'd go.
Oh,
and
like the sort
it's
of being restrained,
a form of like bondage, a form of
something.
Restraint.
And so anyway, someone sent me quicksand porn, and I was like, "Holy shit!
Did they make quicksand porn?"
Oh, it's very popular
right now. Your podcast
quicksand porn. I know that's great. I love learning new things. Quicksand porn.
His podcast on Penis Explosion. That's when they discover the fart queen.
Yeah, there's a woman who makes her money turning guys on by farting through denim and on cakes and things like that. So I don't know if that's what turns you on, but I love when I learn a new like porn term.
Right.
I almost got sounded one time.
What's sounded?
The stick or the it's like up your pee hole.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh.
But
and
what?
By the way, note to the listeners, do not Google sounding.
No.
You will freak out and all the gay porn sites will show up on your computer immediately.
But I think the more important question is how did you almost get sounded and how did you almost not get sounded? Like
I was
two sides to that.
I was a dominatrix gimp for a day for a TV show. So I got cattle prodded in the dick, I got nipple clamps, I got tied up. It was really insane, and one of the things they were going to do was
this
sound
on the
me.
View.
Is that,
Joy Behar. I just used that for a TV show for
yeah,
a day.
I had a show called Hurt Burt where I took dangerous jobs every day. One of the jobs, now fucking my body of work reeks of desperation.
I mean,
I actually think you do a great job of creating your own content.
Oh.
So, I mean, don't wait for other people to tell you what to do. You're just doing it, which
yeah,
is awesome.
But, yeah,
but you also almost got sounded in that process.
Yeah. But as soon as I got sounded, I was like, holy shit. And then this lady, Mistress Isabella, it's really interesting that I guess it's insightful people that know what they're turned on to. And then there were certain things that she showed me that I was like, oh, fuck, that's hitting a button. Like, and I can't imagine I can't imagine what it would feel like to try to deny that. For me to be turned on to something like if my wife puts on rubber gloves, I literally I'm like
like to wash the dishes.
Oh, dude,
really?
Oh my god! And I tell you, if I smell them, I fucking lose my shit.
Really?
The
god,
smell?
You'd be an easy lay. I could just walk in, throw on some rubber gloves. I could literally get fucked and do my dishes at the same time.
My only gay thought I've ever had was Brad Pitt in Fight Club when he's got those yellow rubber gloves on.
Oh,
I'm like,
everyone would fuck Brad Pitt except me. But everyone else would.
In that one, he was very universal.
Yeah.
He was
just ripped and
But what do you think
it is
about the rubber gloves?
I have no idea. I have no clue. But Mr. Isabella kind of connected. So my whole point is, I can't imagine, like, I knew I was straight based off of but it's interesting that you say that because you go, yeah, I guess everyone always knew.
Yeah, because I remember being turned on when I was like 5 by like a music video. A guy was wearing leather pants. It was the first time I'd ever seen a guy wear leather pants before. And that was, you know, making everything downstairs hum.
So it was both was it the leather and the man or just the man?
Both, yeah. But it was specifically the man in the leather pants. And I remember thinking, well, that's, I like that. I remember one time, I can't remember. Yeah, like maybe just that, like music videos and stuff. I can't really remember what else is it like when I'm thinking of like really young. But then in middle school, I was really aware of guys and being turned on and, you know.
But you're younger than us, right?
Yeah, you're like 30.
Yeah. So did you grow up?
No, when it was not easy. No.
Oh, wasn't?
No.
Because right now it's cool to be gay. Or like
well, now it's like
school.
With vlogs and YouTube and Instagram, it's like, I think identity and self-identity and like being unique is celebrated, where when I was in middle school, it was not. It was about conforming and being like everybody else. And if you weren't like everybody else, you were, you know, ridiculed for it. And of course, I was effeminate and running around, hanging out with girls, and guys were just always sort of like turned off by my energy. And so I was really made fun of. Middle school was the worst. That was really the worst of it. Yeah, it was horrible. But, you know, I thank God for women. I always think gay men, if without women, would be... we'd be dead.
But then they eventually betray you. Then they get married and they don't need you anymore. So I don't know if you're at that stage in your life.
Yes, my.
You're also in a business though, where people are.
Three of my best girlfriends have gotten on that ship and it's sailed. They are now with their husbands and we rarely speak.
Really?
Uh huh. But best, I mean, like, grew up together, best friends. But that's also understandable. But, you know, they find a husband and that's like a boat just sails away.
He also has a gay brother.
Your brother's gay?
Yeah, my older brother's also gay. And my cousin. My cousin grew up on the same block as us.
Now, do you believe that you are... because this is...
genetic?
Yes.
Yes. Because my mother is Italian and Mexican, and her father... So she,
I'm interested to see how that works into turning you gay.
I feel like
you picked these two. Excuse me?
No, okay, so this is why. So we think it's genetics because my mom's one of seven. Five of the seven are Mexican-Italian. The other two, my grandma remarried, a Sicilian, are just Italian-Italian, right?
Okay.
So the three of the five boys on the Mexican side are gay. Three of the five. Wow. And then everyone else on the Sicilian side, which I think is four, are not. And we think my aunt's uncle, I don't want to say their names, but we think he was gay because he was beaten up in high school and he's Mexican. He had a women's hair salon. He did theater. He was effeminate. Like my aunt's, and he's like, he was definitely gay. So I wonder, we're always like, it's the Mexican side that we're all gay because we're Mexican. But yeah, so I think if it was genetics, that would be the most proof that I have.
Because I always thought it was offensive to say homosexuality was a choice. I always thought that. But now there's the left has gotten so fucking insane.
Well, there's like queer sci-fi or whatever they call it. There's like two spirits, queer identified.
Well, there's so many letters too.
R2D2, LGBT, R2D2, C3PO. I mean,
queer doesn't necessarily mean you're gay. It could mean that you're an ally. It could mean that you're questioning. But there's also another letter.
You
for
wear
questioning
a dress.
For Q. Yeah, there's just queer is this sort of catch-all for what I think you're saying, and not in an offensive way to people who are identified as queer, but where you kind of can be everything.
Yeah,
we're in that culture a little bit of where everybody gets a medal.
Yeah,
so now everybody's gay. Sort of.
We had a teacher. We had a teacher in college tell us that that everyone was gay. And that, like, and I remember being in class being like, wait, how can she tell me I'm gay? And then,
A woman?
It was a woman.
Everyone in this class is.
Hi.
Yeah.
I'm Roberta. I feel like we're now a lesbian.
Yeah.
What do you think? She was a lesbian?
She must have been, but there's a faction that says that it is not genetic now because. They're afraid that if they do say that it's genetic, that they'll be able to isolate that gene and parents change it or which is so slippery.
They could change it, but then expect
do have an abortion. Because I said to my wife the other day, I said, if we were just talking, I go, if you could take a pill that would ensure that your child was straight, would you do it? And she said, no. I said, that's so funny, though, because you took prenatal vitamins to make sure they were healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like, I'm assuming that if they had that pill, people
would. Some yeah. people would.
I don't think it's genetic in the same way that your eyes are blue or brown. I think it's, I mean, it really is just like, I don't know if it's a genetic makeup or, there's also studies that show that some, when a, it could be from the hormones that the fetus releases and the body releases, and it's during brain development. So there's a bunch of explanations as to why people are the way they are. But
do you think on average, do you think gay men are smarter than straight men?
What I think you're trying to get to is, I think anytime, this is how I'll answer the question. And
do you run into dumb gay guys?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Are you out of your mind? Yeah.
Like, every gay guy I know seems to be, like, intelligent. I don't really run into, like, dumb straight guys. They're a dime a fucking dozen.
I think anyone who sort of grows up having to look from the outside in is not necessarily smarter, but just grows up quicker or is more aware of their surroundings, which I think straight people a lot of times are not aware of their surroundings. Like, a lot of, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 5 years, and people, one thing people said to me, and a lot of gay men get this, is, wow, you figured out your voice so quickly, it takes so long for people to, since I was 13, I was having to look from the outside in. So I was hyper aware of not only how other people felt of me and society, but how I was acting, and there was a constant need to check on myself. Was I walk a certain way, talk a certain way, look a certain way? I mean, when you're just hyper aware of what you're giving off and trying to
avoid conflict,
you get smart real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, of course I learned my voice because I was trying to deny what I knew for so long. So getting on stage and being myself is not the biggest challenge for me in comedy, where I think some straight people, where it's so easy to live and, you know, grow up and everything is sort of made for you and your gender is already set for you, you know, you may not be as aware of your feelings or what ticks you off, you know?
I think that's really interesting because
I think the most serious I've ever been on a podcast, by the way.
Oh, no. I can tell when my fans like shit because
like
I get
it.
Engaged. If I'm engaged
in a
conversation.
The first tweet I get is faggot.
The what?
The first tweet you get is faggot.
Yeah, you fucking faggot.
That's from me.
No. Rogan Starr was the first guy I knew to take that word out of the vernacular, and he stopped saying it altogether. This is probably 5 years ago, and this is before Todd Glass came out and explained to everyone what that word meant, to how that word affected him growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, I will say that nowadays when you do hear it, it does have a real snap to it.
It should.
People get jarred.
If I say it at a show, well, specifically LA audiences, but
yeah.
When I said faggot last night, the room went, and then I said, who is gay here? No one raised their hands. I said, so what are we talking about?
Because they're now trained, if that's the right verb, to not even say that word, think that word, which
right.
is progress. But
it is.
But it's something about, I find that we say it sort of to take the power away from it, but it's still a hard word and a horrible word.
So one of the reasons why I love Pat is because when I came out of the closet, I was 18, my brother... We're not close, my brother and I. He's not a bad person. We're just not close. He gave me a CD with a podcast burned on it, which was yours.
He talks so hard. My name is Vince.
And it was his podcast, and it was three gay men, and I was 18 listening to it. And they had a segment on the show that said, when you're called a faggot, let us know. So people would call on the show, hi, I was walking down the street, and a car rolled down the windows and screamed faggot at me. And then everyone was like, well, he was asking for it. Anyways, it's like,
that's our way of taking the piss out of it.
That saved me. That really saved me.
The anger behind that word.
Because I was so in fear of that word because I've been called it a thousand times. To hear
you've been called it, I've been called it a thousand times too.
But very different meaning.
Very different.
But because you know you're not. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but
yeah.
Like you heard that and didn't go home and, you know, like, oh, like I'm, because we found when we would hear that. We thought we'd been discovered.
Yes.
Or we'd been found out, and then all hell's going to break loose.
Right.
Is where you heard it, and yes, you didn't like the word, but then you still had that longing for a woman, and I don't know, you probably forgot, but we ate that.
Right.
For all those years.
That's actually
swallowed it,
very...
let it just blow up in our stomachs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, yeah,
Not to take away, if you were hurt by it,
No. I was never hurt by it. I was actually called it in, like... When I heard it, it was more of like a friendly
Well, I think I went to an all-boys high school.
I did,
that
too.
That was a term that was also thrown around, so I don't think it wounded everybody. I think that just was a term of endearment almost. Or
so
like,
funny. Yeah, it's there was a guy that sat next to me all growing up. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, too, who is now gay. He's out. He lives in L.A. He's an actor.
Shocking.
You know what's crazy is he saw me. I've had two run-ins of guys that I grew up with that have since come out. And one was in New York, and one was this guy. He was doing headshots with my roommate. And my roommate said, Lorenzo was like, hey, where'd you grow up? He said, Tampa. And he said, so funny, my roommate grew up in Tampa. He goes, really? He goes, where'd you go to school? And he goes, Jesuit. And he goes, oh, yeah. You
did Jesuit high school.
Yeah. Where?
Omaha.
In Omaha.
Prep.
And
hi, Creighton Prep.
He goes, my roommate went to Jesuit. When did you graduate? And he goes, 91. He goes, hold on. And he brings him down, and the guy immediately is like, fuck, there's mm-hmm. I have to explain. So he goes down and he goes, Bert, do you know him? And I look at him and I'm like, I'm not gonna say his name because I just feel like it. I don't think it matters, but I don't want to say it for this guy, but let's just call him Dan. I go, Dan, what the fuck are you doing here? And he just looked at me and froze, and he's like, I'm gay. And I was like, okay. And I was like, in my head I was like, yeah, I think I knew that in high school, but I didn't say anything. And he's like, I'm doing headshots. And then I was like, dude, it's so good to see you. And then the other one was my little brother in my fraternity. He came out. I was walking by Bryant Park in New York, and I saw him.
He's like doing nails on a corner.
No, he had a Puerto Rican guy had his hand in his back pocket.
Oh,
and, that's and how you know.
It was so funny. I didn't recognize it. I didn't notice that until, like, but he's like, there's a dude's hand in my back pocket. And I'm like, let's just call him Dan again. I go, Dan, what's up? And he's like, hi, Bert. I'm gay. And I was like, oh, and I was like, I knew it. Like, because he never lost his virginity. He, like, didn't, well, he wanted to save himself for.
I haven't found the right girl yet.
Yeah. And I was like,
that
just
was me working
at
Michael's.
But I, in my head, it's so funny is that I don't think, I said the word a million times growing up, but I would never say it to someone that I, assuming they were gay, I would say it to my best friends, who, by the way, could have been gay. I just didn't know it. But I would have never said it to the two Dans I just talked about.
I just think also it was a time that people were not as hyperly aware of offending people and what words meant. And I'm not saying that takes away from the pain that it inflicted in a lot of people. But I think now people seem to be really aware of words and what they mean and double meanings and what you can and what you can't say and pronouns. And it's like it's become a whole other thing.
Yeah, it's so interesting though.
Did you have a bully in high school?
I did.
Oh,
who?
Oh, I won't say the name, but I wrote him a couple of years ago because I saw him on Facebook and he had kids and it looked like they're having the time of their lives. And I wrote him, you know, I wasn't even friends with him. I wrote him and said, "Looks like you're happy. Your kids look happy. I hope that you don't raise them to be as horrible as you."
Oh shit!
Good for you.
I said, you ruined my high school experience.
Can you just show me what he looks like?
I will.
I won't say his name.
He actually responded, and I could tell he was truly apologetic. But I thought, I just can't see you. And also, a lot of friends, you know, hey, you can see on Facebook, you can see your friends that are friends with him. Like, you fucking traitors! This guy was a monster. Like, none of you should be talking to him. But now he is. He's, you know, he's an adult and probably pretty nice. And
what did he say?
He just wrote back and said, "I'm sorry that I was awful," you know, or something like that. And I just thought, okay.
See, I think I gave off a very vulnerable, sensitive vibe.
Yeah, you don't come. Some straight guys, I think, don't come off. I think if they're like, they like are confident in themselves or they know who they are, that they're not threatened by someone else being gay. But some, it's always like one or the other. Like one is either super threatened by someone else being gay. This is me when I was in high school. And then the other would be like, they just didn't give a shit. Some guys were just totally confident in themselves and didn't give a shit. And you have that vibe where it's like, you just, I don't think you give a shit.
But I also got bullied aggressively but it was an all-boys Catholic high school, so I think you know what I'm talking about when there were just fucking alphas who were dicks, who if you were the guy wearing a trench coat listening to the Smiths, you were out of the norm, and they were like, fucking light this bitch up.
And then, I mean, they'd find your weakness, or whatever they perceived your weakness to be. So you didn't have to necessarily be gay to also be bullied by those same people.
It was big Cuban guys.
What was that about people? Like, what is that? Like, they just, you know, Fran Lebowitz always says, she's like, there's no such thing as democracy. It's not natural in humans. Look at a playground. You'll see immediately that one kid is in charge and the rest follow.
He's kind of weaselly looking.
Can I see?
Yeah, and he's with this kid.
He kind of looks like Matt Bronger.
Oh, he looks like a
yeah, he does. He does.
Like a nice faggot. You
know, yeah, but I...
His hair looks like a shitty Julius Caesar.
Give him hell. But
I'll
yeah,
let him have
think
it.
That, I do think we probably... A lot of us were probably bullied in high school, but, you know... Just for what
it's
we
a very, you guys got a very different type of bullying that I got.
I think, Pat, you put it and you said it perfectly where we feel like we've been discovered because I think
found out.
Yeah, found out. I think the difference is that some people are bullied and it hurts, and some people are bullied, and it is this thing where, like, if you know, being gay, it's like, oh God, no one else, you just feel like no one else can know. You have that, you just have to protect that secret as much as you possibly can. Or yeah, all hell will mm-hmm. break loose.
Yeah. I mean, your mom might have just, you know, oh, there's Jimmy again looking at porn. I mean, but like, if anyone in our world knew we were like thinking about men, I think that would have been very harsh.
What did your mom say to you when you came out of the closet?
She blamed my friend. She said she thought, like, did Don put you up to this? Like, I said, no, I did it myself. But no, I just
Don put you up to this.
Everything wasn't normal. The things we were liking weren't normalized. So we were
correct.
We were so afraid of people finding out.
That's why I make a joke because the first gay person I saw on TV was C-3PO. You know,
yeah,
we didn't have Glee. Yeah, we had a robot. Who was gay?
No, C-3PO is very British-y and...
Super gay.
Is that on your Seth Meyers set?
Uh-huh.
Georgia, my oldest, and I watched your Seth Meyers set the other night. It was right before we did Goddamn Comedy Jam.
Oh, cool.
And you in it, you do some straight guy voices.
Yeah.
And Georgia goes, hold on. I can't tell. Is he gay or is that the act? And I went, no, Georgia, he's definitely gay.
Look at my shirt.
And she goes,
plus the dick within your mouth. Yeah, they had to CGI
that
out.
Sort of gave it away. Yeah. Which I'm glad that they allowed
that
for Seth Meyers.
They allowed it. Yeah,
yeah. She goes, but yeah, but he can do a regular voice. Why didn't he just do that all the time? I go, I think this is what he sounds like, Georgia. And she was like,
that's
12.
The point of the joke.
Yeah,
but she was working toward it. That's,
yeah,
it's a brain working, trying to figure you out.
Yeah, she was like, I'm confused. And then she was like, hang on, he's not really gay. He's doing that for his act. And I went, no, he's real. I go, why would you?
I opened with "Hold Me, Bambino." I opened in like my falsetto.
You're a really interesting person that I like. That I literally go, I can't imagine I've even gotten close or will be able to close to scratch the surface on this podcast. Because like as soon as you go, I was an illustrator, I sang opera. There's like three things already where I go, you know, not a lot of comics have that backstory. A lot of comics are just like, I worked the door at a comedy club.
I'm like drawing TV commercials and singing with drag queens and stuff. Yeah.
I have synesthesia.
I do have synesthesia. Yeah.
What's that?
It's going to sound crazy if people don't know what it is. It's a brain. Your senses and brain development start overlapped. In other words, like they eventually find their own paths. Like they could become separated. Mine didn't. So when I see numbers or letters, I see color. Or when I hear music, I see color. So everything is color associated, like unprovoked.
Two
is red.
I'm confused.
Yeah, like, it's a weird thing. It's you have to look it up because I'm going to sound insane. Some people have it; they taste shapes. Like it's just your brain sort of makes associations with things that you can't help.
Other than
it.
Just seeing the number two, you see red. Yeah, or do you just see red?
When I see two, like I'm looking at the letter A over there, I'm seeing A, but the A is, I know that's yellow. My brain is telling me that is yellow. The E is green, the N is
that,
purple.
How is that? How do you, like...
I know. You brought something. That's going to be hard to explain.
I just love it. I still don't understand it. I've known him for years. But I just love that there's this weird quirk about him that you can say these things and he sees something.
I have met one other person who has synesthesia. And it's a real thing. You can look it up. And I took it. Yeah. Like I met with people who like look stuff up for synesthesia. They're like, they want to meet people with synesthesia and like do tests and stuff like that. So I did like a synesthesia test with everyone. This group or whatever, but I met one other person who had it, and he was a she at the time, but he and I felt,
wait, hold on, he was
he's transitioning,
so he's a dude now. Okay,
but we had so much in common. We both met in art school. We both drew the same. We approached drawing the same, which is an artist. When you see another artist approach a drawing the same way as you, you tend to cling on to each other because people approach illustrations very differently.
Yeah,
but him and I felt way on the same wavelength. We also were both musically inclined. We were both, I mean, we just, our brains sort of worked together. And it was interesting because it was the first person I'd ever met that I could sit down and talk to about, like, let's listen to music and talk about what we see. I know this sounds so weird.
No.
It does sound weird, but I think it adds layers to, like you were saying, these layers to him. I've known him for years and I'm still trying to figure him out. But not in a bad way, but like you just have all these fascinating layers.
I think the coolest thing about what's happening with media and that a conversation like that and this comes up is that you start going, oh, I got that shit too. Not that, but like I remember a long time ago, I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me because I would think really insanely horrible thoughts and I couldn't stop it. And then Patrice O'Neill and I were in Scotland. And I made a joke about it. Tried to make a joke on stage about it. And Patrice is like, "Yeah, you got intrusive thought." And I said, "What's that?" And he goes, "It's a mental disorder." He goes, "I got it too." Mm. And he's like, "Yeah." And he was like, "You remember my joke about?" He had a great joke about some lady wanted him to hold his baby, and he goes, "I can't hold your baby because immediately I'm like, fuck it, I want to throw it on the ground." Mm. And he's like, "You're not supposed to think like that," but that's. And then she's like, "No, please hold it." And he's like, "Come on, fuck it. She doesn't want the baby. Punt it." Like she's gonna try to give it to it. And so I was like, "Oh wow, I got intrusive thought," and yeah. It's also a part of OCD. I have OCD a little bit. Yeah.
This is something one of my best friends has that he's dealing with right now, and it's bad.
Oh, OCD.
But he's got it. Yeah, we're talking about like...
I had the darkest moment in my life with obsessive compulsiveness was I had my first one-night stand in New York. By the way, I just met a comic. I'll talk to you about her later. I think you know her, but... Bert, shut the fuck up. So... So I had my first one-night stand, and I was working at Barnes & Noble on Astor Place.
Faggot.
And so, yeah. There was a gay guy that had just come out of the closet. He was from the Midwest, and he was we worked together, and he was my introduction into anything. I didn't ever even knew a gay guy, but he had just discovered his sexuality, and he was fucking all the time. He got fucked out of came in with a black eye. He got fucked out of a loft bed one night, and he was like rough fucking night.
He was
fucking getting it. He got fucked out of a loft bed.
That is a New York story.
I'd introduce myself like that. If I was something that happened, I'd be like, "That's my name.
I am Pat Powers. I got fucked out of a loft bed.
I'm here for the job." Like,
yeah. he
that's your credit.
Yeah,
he was concerned that he had gotten herpes, I think, or I don't know what it was. And so we were talking about it. He was like, "I'm freaked out. I think I got something. I don't know." But he was fucking a lot. And I was like, and then I had a one night stand, and immediately in my brain, I'm with him, I'm feeling his energy. He has the medical book, and he's looking at it. And then I'm in the bathroom, and I start looking at my dick, and I convince myself that I've got something. Mm-hmm. And I start spiraling so fucking bad. All I remember, and this is
of course,
the most,
one gay guy takes him and throws him into a
fucking.
And the gay guy,
all
it
takes is one gay guy.
By the way, he was sucking dudes' dicks at nightclubs, like. On the reg, like he told me about this nightclub that I'd been to, and he goes, "Go behind the curtain. That's where everyone's fucking." And I was like, "What?" And apparently, there was this big curtain on the other side. I remember peeking my head through, and there were dudes. It was down in the meatpacking district.
I went to a place there's a place called the Cock in the East Village where that happens all the time.
Yeah.
But and for some reason, even though it's like one of this, it looks like a Renaissance painting of hell in the basement. I mean, that's what the visual looks like of this gay club.
Yeah.
But there's an Irish woman in like her early hundreds who is a,
early.
Early hundreds.
She's the door guy. So like all these like big beefy men wearing no clothes are walking in. She's like, "Have a good time, latte." But there was a place in Rome like that my friend took me to, and it was a bathhouse, and you went in and they had like one room. It was like a normal room, a room that you could smoke and watch porn, and then a room that was literally a black room. I mean, it was like you couldn't see anything. You could see nothing in there. And you just go in. And I did not go in. I sat and smoked cigarettes and watched TV with my friend Jesse. And Jesse was like, we should go. But he sounds like Julie Childs.
I would never be able to not go.
Oh, like, I was horrified. I was literally smoking cigarettes. And there was like this Chinese-Italian man speaking to us. And he was just like, "When are we going to go in the room? When are we going to go in the room?" And I was just like, "Not adesso." Like, we just kept yelling at him, "Not now." Yeah. It was kind of scary.
So there aren't black rooms for you to just honk a woman's knockers out of nowhere?
If there was, it would still be just dudes.
Oh, yeah, of course. Women, because yeah. I mean, you talk about Grindr, women are woman would ever put herself
my brother
that.
Who is straight is very jealous of the gay community. Like, he's like, I just love it if there was like something that I could truly drive over to a woman's house, like honk her knockers, like stick one in and like never talk to her again. He's like, it doesn't work like that. He hears all these stories of me and my friends of that just like someone will come up literally just for like one type of thing and leave and never bother you again. He's like, why that just doesn't happen.
I said to Tom Segura and I, Tom Segura is a comedian, and he's like probably one of my really close friends. And so we did this weight loss challenge, and then Rogan flew us up to San Francisco. We flew first class, got loaded on the flight there, went to a Cavs Golden State Warriors game, sat courtside, fucking smoked weed, got high as shit, had a great fucking steak dinner, stayed at the Four Seasons. The next morning we're drinking Tito's and sodas on the flight home. And in the middle of the flight home, both a little high, he just looks at me and just goes, dude, if we were gay, this is what it would be like. And I was like,
all the time.
I was like, fuck. And he was like, just having a great fucking time, laughing our asses off.
You would think that, but I think a lot of gays, their demons get to them. I mean, I don't think every gay is just like living it up. I mean, I think there's still a lot of, we're still...
Because a lot of gays are unattached children-wise. I mean, they're starting to get married and adopting the mainstream way of doing things. So they have a lot of freedom to, like, I think they may not go to all those sports things you referenced. My brain melted a bit. I wasn't sure what you're saying. But the equivalent of that.
I guess technically not all gay guys would want to go to Golden State Cavs game.
I was like, I think he's speaking English. I'm not sure. I might have had a stroke. I'm not sure what he's saying. But yes, but it's that freedom. I think that's the thing you were talking about with your friend was just this ability to like, this whole day can just be about
us hanging out with friends. Yes.
And whether it's booze or drugs or sports or movies or black rooms where you can just honk, dicks. And we can all have that.
Yeah. I have a lot in common with my wife and I love her. But at the end of the day, she's a woman and I'm a man. And we have very different wants and needs out of life.
Yeah, every time I hear straight people talk about like men trying to get women or women.
She wanted a lot of eye contact and affirmation.
She wanted to cuddle last night.
Jesus Christ.
She was like, I go, we're watching Black Sails. And then at the end of the night, she's like, could it be possible for us just to lay in bed and cuddle? And I was like, well, I can try. And then I was like, nah, I have to have sex.
Yeah.
And she's just like,
what does it take to make a woman come, Pat?
Like, I thought, like, just solid eye contact and telling them you care. And
holding up, like, a 401k.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, showing them the 401k that we're safe. I'm helping with the nest here. We're good. And then she starts to juice, I think. When she knows that you got enough in your bank account that you're going to,
gay men knowing nothing about women's sexuality.
Yeah, that's our take on women.
But I always hear, like, my friends talking about, like, how hard it is for, like, guys and girls. Like, it's like, oh, it just sounds like there's such a dance you have to play because men and women really, I don't think, understand each other.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I think. But gay men, there's just a direct, like...
Well, it's the thing your friend also was saying. It's like the male energy... You're doing everything but fucking. Well, excuse me. Except for fucking.
we're doing everything but fucking.
But then imagine you two men with the same, like, energies. I mean, that's... Like, who don't want to cuddle. They just both want to fuck.
I already know. I'd come home, and I'd open the door, and I'd go... Tom and I used to make a joke about it. And I go, I'm just going to wrestle fuck you. Try to hide. And he'd just run, and I'd fucking attack him.
I got a little bit of a semi with it. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah, straight men do a lot of gay stuff.
Dude, I'll tell you right now. Gay jokes, meaning like
Liza.
No, like making, like being gay with your friend is my favorite pastime.
It was my favorite pastime too.
No, but like last night, I was with my buddy Eric and we're checking out at Gelson's and I'm sitting with all the cart with the groceries, but he's getting vodka. And so he had to go back in line and someone goes, can I help you? And I just went, oh no, I'm waiting for my boyfriend. Doing that as straight guys is so much fucking fun.
Why do you think that is?
I have no fucking idea. My buddy Eddie and I used to
blow each other.
No.
Nothing too gay, just blew each other.
Just suck each other's dicks until we blew loads of our mouths. But, like, we used to, It's now it's just going to sound gay.
But you're fine. You're safe.
We used to see who would tap out first. Like, so what we...
You jack off together and see who would come first?
I'm just getting comfortable now. No. Okay.
No, like, in public, we would pretend to be dating.
Okay.
And we would see which one would stop the game first and like one time... We were in line, and he was like, "Honey, come here." And I was like, "Fuck!" It started like it was just like it would, and he'd go.
I think that's more about seeing how uncomfortable you can make people around
I think
you,
that might be
or making each other uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like that was what is more about
all inclusive, like everybody. Yeah. Oh, hello.
Where's this fucking phone?
I love that you have a house phone. I mean, that's a landline.
Yeah, it's for radio.
I mean, was that the devil who was just talking through your phone?
Yeah.
That was the devil. Called.
Jesus Christ. I fucking hate this phone in here. My wife's like, you need it just in case.
And just so, in case for moments like this?
Yeah. I
call 911.
I do call into radio shows sometimes, and so you can't. It's better to have a landline.
Is it calling to a radio?
I think you're the gay thing you're talking about, too, is as a comic, I probably like to push and see what the reactions are. I've noticed this with, you know, the comics I've met through him too. There's like it happens to be you're using gay as the medium to do it, but I think you just want to see what the room does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the other person does.
My cousin and I would we'd pull up to like a red light, and then he'd be in the passenger seat and we'd get right next to the window of the person, and he would start flailing his arms and losing it and screaming and just and I would of course not react, and we would see how long it would take. Would this person react? Would they not react? And most of the times people try their best to pretend nothing's going on while there's a person flailing and freaking out and the car around you screaming crowing like a chicken, but
that's
and, you know, they're not responding.
Is this the gay cousin?
Uh-huh.
Are you and your cousin close?
Like, we talk, I think. I was literally, these are all my texts from him just this morning.
Oh, really?
We talk nonstop all day, every day.
Really?
All day, every day, yeah. And if you spoke to him, you wouldn't be able to tell who's talking. We have the same, like, mannerisms, voice, everything.
Really?
Yeah, we both didn't get along with our brothers, but we grew up next to each other and we're the same age.
Yeah, you grew up on the street where you had 19 kids?
All my cousins, yeah.
Where did I hear that?
Yeah, in my stand-up, I exaggerate, but I did grow up. My mom's one of seven, and she had all her brothers and sisters had kids at the exact same time. So I grew up literally with my cousins. I mean, I'm not making a joke. Probably 4 days out of the week, I was with my cousins. Or it was like we'd be eating dinner and my Uncle Mike would just burst in. He's like, I can't fit this turkey in my freezer. Take it. You know, like if I didn't like what my mom was making, I'd eat at my Aunt Cindy's house. Like, that's the kind of life I grew up in.
That is so fucking cool.
Yeah, we were very, that was the, like, that was the most Italian thing that I got from my mom and her family. Because most people are like, my mom makes gravy. But like, ours was more about the actual culture of Italy, where it was all about the family. I saw my grandparents realistically 3 days a week growing up. They were just always in my life.
Where did you live?
In Chicago.
Wow. What in like what area of Chicago?
Arlington Heights. We grew up in Arlington Heights, next to O'Hare.
Okay.
Yeah. But but my cousin, who's also gay, I mean, we didn't know each other were gay when we were little kids, but he's also an artist. He lives in New York now, and he's in men's fashion. And we were just, I think because both of our brothers were not close to us, but we had like a similar energy, and we were just inseparable. I mean, I still think he's my soulmate, not like as in a, like a lover way, but I think people can be, you know, just like
platonic.
Yeah, like a connection, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, he's my best friend.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, how old were you when you had your first sexual experience?
Probably, like 13, I made out with a girl.
Yeah.
This girl named, oh, I'm not going to say her name, but she was
Dan.
Dan.
I made out with
Danielle. Danielle.
And I used to try and date women. Like, I'd work at Michael's and I dated this girl, Francesca, who I still talk to. She's great.
She's not sexy.
I broke up with her in the yarn section. She cheated on me with her Puerto Rican boyfriend who lived in his mom's basement.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Normal.
I could never. Did you? And you dated women, right?
In high school, yeah. I fingered a few women and just,
have you ever fucked a chick?
I've never fucked a chick.
Fucked a chick?
No, just with my fingers.
Did you ever fuck a chick?
No, never. I'm a gold star gay.
Shut up.
That area is very scary. I remember seeing my brothers, they're 7 and 8 years older than I am, and I'd see their Playboys, and I just, like my eyes couldn't settle on that the vagina. It just looked too weird. And then many years later, when I felt it and saw it, I was like, ooh. Like in a movie, like when someone touches something and they can, like, you know, see their history, or like some of the sci-fi movies, like I just felt like years of oppression if I were to follow this any further.
It's so funny. When I first saw a vagina, I looked at it the same way Sir Edmund Hillary must have looked at Everest. Like, I've got to fucking go there.
That longing, you said. Like, when you're not just, you're talking about the Vogue model. You're probably the same thing with that. But I've got to have
I'm
that.
I'm also trying not to sound like misogynist. But I think I'm sure women look at, I remember my sister talking about dicks, you know, her and her friends, like, ew, like, you know, they like didn't understand, like, it came out at you and is it going to twirl and spin and stuff like that. I think it's like every
does it?
It well, okay. Pat. Do we have to talk?
Twirl and spin. We do.
Okay.
Does a dick twirl and spin?
So I think everyone's like afraid of each other's
genitals.
Pieces. Fortune Femster has a great joke about when she was giving a guy a hand job. She was like, "I'm gonna make it like work." Like, you know, she like.
Yeah.
I think was it Fortune? Yeah, it was Fortune.
It's Fortune's.
That joke. A huge lesbian.
Okay, okay, yeah.
She's
I don't know
one
her.
Of the funniest people
I've
ever.
I've only seen her do stand-up once, meaning like in person, and she made me laugh hysterically.
Oh, she's so funny. And she's also like the nicest.
Oh.
She's so cool.
Yeah, I went up to her to tell her she was funny, and I think she thought I was a fan and passed by me, and I was like, okay.
All right. Now, what was your first gay experience, sexual experience?
Like a sleepover, like guys humping each other and stuff.
Wait, walk me through this.
Yeah, that's like pretty much, I mean, nothing big. I mean, guys would like truth or dare. Like, I mean, I was like not taking part of it, but it was like the same thing, like straight people acting gay, like as a joke.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, first gay experience was in college with this guy, and I made the worst choice. It was this guy who, I think when you're coming out of the closet, you'll just, anyone who can rip you out of that closet, you'll just take it.
By the way, it's the same with being straight. I didn't get the ones I wanted all the time.
No.
Just the ones that were there.
Yeah. I took anything I could get also.
Yeah. This guy, he was the worst artist. He would like wrap himself in wire and I was like, I'll date you. But, I mean, we made out in his, like, loft studio.
That was the first
downtown Chicago.
Did he fuck you out of a loft as well?
No, he never fucked me out of a loft. We never fucked. We never had sex. The first guy I had sex with was a good experience. I won't say his name, but he's like...
Do I know him?
No. But that was a great experience. It was my friend's friend, and we had sex on her couch, and it was nice, and he was sweet, and it was a good experience.
Bigger than you?
Like his dick?
No. Well, both, yeah.
No, we're like the same. He was like another Italian guy. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was like, this is an Italian.
Better looking than you?
Yeah, he's super hot.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think much of my looks, to be honest with you, but I think
you're a really good looking dude.
He is like.
And you're in really great shape.
Sure. Yeah. Now, the past week, I'm like body dysmorphic. I haven't been to the gym in a week, and so I'm
fat. Yeah, skin, but he's clearly not fat.
Yeah,
I mean you're tight.
I am. My sister has put me on a. I've gained like 15 pounds the past like
of
year.
Muscle?
Yeah, because my sister is like a IFBB pro.
What's that?
It's just like her fitness, standing on stage, paints herself, travels the country, like trains people. Like her whole life is that world.
Wow.
And she, I know.
She was a fitness instructor, but I didn't know she was.
Oh yeah, she's like a judge for these competitions, and she knows all the people, like the same way comedy works, like it's a whole world, like she's in that world and she's like really well known in that world. And so I just called her one day and I was like, I just want to feel better about how I look and fit into clothes. And so she said, okay.
You have big holes in your jeans.
My jeans are all ripped out. But so she said, okay.
By the way, ever since you I never had paid attention to jeans really, but you were talking about your jeans the other night. I have seen that is like that's all I see on like fucking good looking people are those jeans.
These ripped up jeans.
Yeah. I want to say even like Jay Farrow had them on the other day. And
Jay Farrow
like,
dresses very well. When I saw him like a month ago, and he had like this really nice leather jacket. Like he dresses very well.
He dresses really well.
He's also in good shape.
He's in great
shape.
He's gotten
like all jacked or whatever.
I told him I was with standing next to Segura, and I was watching Jay do stand up, and he was in a sleeveless hooded sweatshirt.
Get it, Jay.
And I was like, I'm sitting in the back and he's just destroying. And you're just old sometimes when you do stand up and you're looking at young kids fucking killing it. And I just go, I'm standing next to Segura and I go, who the fuck does stand up in a sleeveless shirt? And Segura looks at me and goes, you're shirtless right now. I was like, oh, you're fucking right.
You and I, but you know what? You and I both did our performances shirtless.
I haven't done anything on stage with a shirt on in
years. Yeah, it was my first time actually taking. I was halfway through I Will Always Love You, and this is for the Comedy Jam, and I was in a tank top, so I was basically shirtless, and then there was one gay guy in the audience, or at least one who admitted it. Yeah. So during the instrumental break, I just said, is this the gayest thing you've ever seen? Because, I mean, the audience was, they were the best audience ever. And this one, everyone was cheering, so I can make it gay. So I ripped off my shirt and I said, where's that gay guy? And he, like, raised his hand and I threw my shirt at him. And then Jeremiah went and got my shirt. I came out afterwards, I did the interview, and Jeremiah was like, here's your shirt back. I was like, thanks, Jeremiah.
I watched your interview. I watched your show this weekend in the car with Erica Spera.
I don't know.
Fucking hanging this goddamn phone up.
This is what I love about podcasts, though. There's I like all the little.
Oh, can I the eccentricities of it?
Yeah, I do.
It's I
not,
love it
not
because
perfectly polished, and this it makes them more accessible.
Yeah. She was doing a gig with me, and I watched it, and I was like, motherfucker, you can sing. I had to follow you the other night, and it was
I
literally, I think I opened up going, why the fuck is he doing stand-up?
And smiling.
I was like, that is the fucking most, I literally, my opening line was, lower your fucking expectations. You will not be seeing what you just saw.
It. I muscle it
with energy. I don't,
was that the
I can't
one
sing.
With the Creed guy?
No, this was the other night we did Bill Burr and Dane Cook and you and I and Dean
Del Rey.
Who else was on? I think that was
That's it
on the show. But I sang, I did Celine Dion's All Coming Back to You Now. But then as a surprise for Josh, I sang Nessun Dorma, you know, the opera Nessun Dorma. So it was like way over the top. I mean, I took it too far.
It was pretty fucking insane. I was sitting with Dane and his girlfriend and I go, and he goes, who's this? I go, oh, you don't know what you're about to see right now? And he goes, no, what? And I go, just watch. I go, enjoy. And he was like, why? What? I go, just, you'll see. And you start singing and Dane's jaw drops and he looks at me. He goes, how are we supposed to fucking follow this? And I go,
you're like Susan Boyle.
I go, it was fucking, and Dane and I were fucking literally sitting. Dane's girlfriend brought her phone out, started recording you, and Dane's sitting there, and we are just basically bumping back and forth to each other, going, "This is fucking amazing! It's fucking
amazing!"
That's
so nice of you.
And then I go downstairs to go walk on stage, and Dane comes walking down the stairs, laughing hysterically. He's like, "Yeah, have a great set, man."
Following that, yeah.
That's nice. Yeah,
it's so funny. Is that like, if we're gonna be, I have a hard time with oversharing. But the next day, I was like, fuck, man! Like, I didn't even remember the lyrics to my song. I didn't like in my I have a horrible fucking voice. I lost my voice in the middle of the song. I played the guitar. That's the only thing I did good was I played the guitar.
Yeah,
in the
song. He comes out, plays the guitar, kills it. He killed it so hard that he came into the dressing room like, I think I have to throw up.
I was gonna throw up because I was so overwhelmed at how hard it was to follow you that I was in the shower the next day and I went, hold on. I literally go, hold on. I'm not a singer. I'm not a fucking singer. I was thinking of it the next day.
I literally went through years of training
in
opera.
Apples to apples.
I mean, when people see you on Comedy Jam, it is gonna, that'll go viral. That will go fucking viral.
I hope. That would be great.
Of course
for
it will.
Me in my studio apartment that I live in a place Anne Frank wouldn't hide in. So it would be nice if it does go viral so I could sing more.
You're singing, doing Barbra Streisand?
I'm doing the gayest thing possible. I'm recreating. Okay.
Wait, by the way, you ever hear this joke? What's gayer than come on a mustache?
Liza Minnelli?
No, nothing.
Oh. Yes, yes. I think I could argue that.
You do have a mustache, though.
I do, yeah.
It's a strong mustache.
I know, well, because I can't grow a full beard. I can't do what you do. It's too patchy all down here.
Yeah.
So I just have them. I've had this mustache since I was like 15.
You have really? A very nice beard.
Oh, thank you.
What's her name?
Leanne. So wait, tell me about Streisand.
I'm doing a show called Streisand at the Bonsoir. So this, I don't know if this will be of any interest to you. But most people, when they think of Streisand, we made a joke, we walked in, you have chickens. I mean, she lives in her Malibu compound, and now just she talks like, you know, like
she's ridiculous.
She's ridiculous.
She talked to Tim Cook to change the way that Siri says her name. She likes it to be said
Streisand.
She wants the S being pronounced. So I mean, she's
living in that
diva.
Kind of world. But before she was famous, she was 19 in New York, broke, had a cot she carried with her everywhere so she could sleep. She had 6 different apartments, so she slept in this one that night, this one that night. She basically was couch surfing with her cot.
Yeah.
And she had a show. She only entered a talent contest because they had free London broil for a week. That's why she entered. That's why she has a career, is because there was free food at the other end of it. In the meantime, she was learning French, Italian. She had a pseudonym so she could take multiple acting classes. And she had this show at the Bonsoir where she was opening for Phyllis Diller. And she was singing obscure jazz standards. And it was before she was like Streisand now, like, my chickens lay green eggs. I mean, you know, before this, she was on stage, wouldn't drink, would make patrons buy her a potato, hard on the outside, soft on the inside, speak multiple languages, wearing Egyptian eye makeup, men's clothing, long fingernails, and like belting. I mean, the voice is that's like a whole other aspect to it. But she was just this weird, wild child. She was like Lady Gaga of her time, mm-hmm. in this jazz club. And people, they didn't know if she was Turkish, if she was American, what she was. I mean, they were just... they were amazed by her. She was 19 fucking years old, and they have these recordings of her at the Bonsoir just, you know, yelling, giggling at the audience like this wild child. And so I thought, all right, I want to do my own jazz show, and I've always wanted to do a jazz show. So I thought, fine, now I have enough of momentum to, like, put on my own jazz show. So my friend Henry Kopersky, who's a pianist in New York, we're just recreating the show. But instead of her, I'm not dressing up as her, I'm me, but I'm doing all of her music.
Oh,
but it's
going
to be Matteo at the Bonsoir. I'm doing all of her music with just a pianist. But then in between, I will be doing my act and stand up and talking to the audience.
See, I'm very happy with my career. However, I'm very jealous at the amount of reach, the amount of different things you get to do.
Correct.
Like, meaning, like that's cool as fuck. Like, you know, I've been doing it so long that I'm a little bit in a box of, like, I go, like, even... like, just go up and, I mean, just work, do my act. Like, it's, you know, it's like, I don't know. I wanted to bring visual aids up. Like, one time I wanted to do some stuff with video, but I was like, whatever. I'm at the fucking Funny Bone. They don't have a screen. Never mm-hmm. fucking mind. You know, I'll just fuck it. I'll work on a better story.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the idea that you can do something like that in New York. Like, what's her name? Bridget Everett.
Ah! The best.
She does something so different that I'm not – jealous is the wrong word, but I'm envious.
I look at Bridget and I think, what the fuck am I doing? I mean, she's that amazing.
Yeah.
But I also – you know, I do stand up 4 or 5 times a night, run around, do my spots. This is an outlet for me that's not really stand up.
But that's what's cool about art these days. It is changing so – or not art, but comedy is changing so much that it is – that, like, you know, the next time you go to Montreal and if you do that show at Montreal, it would be fucking sold out every fucking night because everyone's like, it's so – you're not running that exact same race everyone else is running.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to run that race, but you also have the ability to do something totally fucking globally different, which I think is just fucking
badass.
To me,
it was easier to become a stand-up than a singer. I tried to sing before doing stand-up, and I joined this cabaret group. I don't think you ever saw me. Pat, do this, but I joined this cabaret group that was in Chicago, and they would only perform at gay strip clubs. So we even went to fucking Rockford, and we did like.
Gay strip club is the hardest place I've ever bombed.
Is it?
Gay stripper for a night.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah,
you did what for a night?
I was a gay stripper. I wasn't gay, but I was. it was at a gay club, and it was. You had to do a presentation. It was like a performance, and so I mean, I've been a drag queen too. Man, I was a gorgeous drag queen. And it was so funny about I was so obsessed with my eye makeup, like so obsessed with it that I wouldn't take it off. Like I thought it looked so fucking cool.
It looks so pretty on
but
the drag
man,
race
I bombed
when they put their
makeup on. I bombed so hard.
Some
too.
At a gay strip club. But keep going.
Gays are tough, but yeah.
Gays are tough, but I the only reason I did the gig is because I could pick my own music.
Yeah.
So I'd go up at, like, we were performed at Atmosphere a lot, and I would go up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they would have this shit cabaret group. I loved all the dancers, but we were all drunk and shit. So this cabaret group would do this performance, and then it would be a drag queen, right? And then right before the stripper came on, I would come on while the girls changed, and I would like sing a song. So I would pick Streisand, and I would, you know, be up there just like memories, and like there's like old men throwing peanuts at me and like wanting me to get off stage. I mean, and I did that for like a year and a half, and it was a hell gig. So by the first time I did an open mic in Chicago, I was like, this is so glamorous. I was like, there's no strippers and there's no men fluffing themselves in basements and no one's throwing peanuts at me. Really? You're not going to laugh? That's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I can deal with that. So I went through like hell gigs before. And so now people are like, what's your worst hell gig? And I was like, singing at 4 o'clock in the morning in Rockford with old men throwing peanuts at you while you're trying to sing Streisand and run to the parking lot. Like, that's the worst gig I've ever had.
We talked about this. Lady Gaga, You and I is my favorite fucking song.
You and I.
It's my wife loves that. My wife, and I think Lady Gaga is fucking amazing.
She has strength.
She's doing Lysa.
Pizzazz.
Okay.
And also, pizzazz.
That's Lysa. That's a real quote. She can't think of like anything other than.
And she was on Larry King.
It's like Donald Trump.
Yeah, she is. She really is. She's Lysa's. Lysa's just shit. But I love Lysa Minnelli.
Now, what do you guys think about Milo Yiannopoulos?
Watch your mouth.
Pat, what do you think of Milo
Yiannopoulos? I really avoided as much as I could about him because he was so awful. He is gay, though, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely gay.
And he hates gays, and he hates anything like liberal.
Trans and
anything. But it was one of those things where I successfully didn't even, like, my eye, like the way that my eyes looked away at vagina in the Playboy my brothers play with, I very looked away a lot, and it helped because now he's gone, isn't he? Isn't he
literally gone?
Like, I feel like he's been.
Yeah, well, yeah,
from the
what happened?
He was condoning child.
It was like something with underage
sex, and he was talking about how he had a relationship with a man when he was underage. So he went into pedophilia and was essentially condoning it, and that's when literally bye bye. The next day was just
say his name again.
I don't even know if I'm saying Milo Yiannopoulos.
I say Milo Yiannopoulos.
I think it was the name too. No offense,
which
to
I'm
Greeks.
Just making fun of
my
Greeks.
My eyes
but
just couldn't settle on it.
It was so funny.
He was dressed like Angela Lansbury on Real Time, saying, "I don't like trans," and I was like, "What?
What?
It's like you're dressed like a trans. This is Potts."
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't. I couldn't really. I like listening to him on Rogan. Like, he was an interesting guy to hear talk.
I actually think he's mentally ill.
I think
so. I avoided him too, the same way you had. But then when I saw him on Real Time, he kind of had like a tick. I don't think he's mentally well.
I
the same as our president and Melania.
Well, who's Melania? Is that his wife?
Melania Trump. This is why Pat, by the way, is the funniest person on the face of the planet. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you do not understand. This is the funniest person
that's
on Twitter.
True. He says so sweetly, but for
example, let me just speak for Pat real quick.
Yeah, I don't want
to. To me, a comedian, what makes a comedian funny is finding something that everyone's talking about and finding an angle that you would never have thought about. So when Melania Trump stole Michelle Obama's speech, every single tweet, every Facebook post, everything was about the joke was the obvious joke. They were going for, you know, like all these obvious jokes about stealing the speech. And then I was like, okay, what did Pat have to say about it? And Pat's tweet about it was referring to Melania, goes, "Those are not Slovenian teeth."
It's easy to pick apart the easy things, but
those are not Slovenian teeth.
But isn't that great? Like stuff like that, where I'm like, oh yeah.
These people are in power. I mean, like, so the Mealy Mambanopoulos, you know, that could have been scary because he could have kept going further because our president.
Our president has a Breitbart, you know, Steve Bannon in there.
Tweeting at night.
The thing is
tweeting at night.
I don't like people. I'm not a fan of. I like contrarian thought. So if the whole, everyone's going one way, I like to see the other person's coming. I have a very open mind, meaning like I follow a lot of feminists because I like to hear that opinion.
Well, we should all be feminists. Just speaking on them.
Yeah. No, but the hardcore ones that think men should go away.
Well, that's not feminism. That's
masculinity. I even listen to them because I go, I want to hear why you think that. Because.
maybe there is some shitty parts about masculinity. I don't know.
There's anyway, a lot.
There's, I mean,
patriarchy, I would say.
Yeah, it's more patriarchy and masculinity.
I mean, this is, we're getting so meta, but masculinity is also a human. It's a construct. Yeah. It's not real. The you wear pants and a woman wears a dress is a made up thought. The color blue is for boys and pink is for women.
Don't wear. I mean, your dog doesn't put on a dress every day.
I said.
Well, that one does. Oh, that
I
one
said
does.
On the joke I have on stage is I was with Ari Shaffir in New York, and we saw two gay guys walking towards us. They were in jean shorts, work boots. One guy had a mesh tank top on, and the other guy had a python around his neck, no tank top on.
Sure.
And I went...
Like a real python?
Oh, real
like
python.
Like a Britney Spears like a, python?
No, a python. A fucking snake.
Yeah, like her... Yeah,
yeah she had yeah. that. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
That's like all she's...
That's how straight I am. I'm like, I don't know. What,
yeah, you just proved I was testing you, yeah. And you passed. You're not she,
and I said to Ari, I go, I'll never know that freedom. That I'll never know that freedom.
But I think strangely... You do.
No, but...
They're wearing a python because they don't know your freedom.
No, but if you look at... If you look in an audience... I always do this. Like, when you look at the guys in the audience, straight white males are wearing the shackles of heterosexuality. There's no freedom in our outfit choices.
It looks like a crown to me.
It's like...
I think
it's
you
like,
and I view this very differently. Let me ask you something. Have you had to change your wardrobe based off the state and cities you visit? Then you're not wearing shackles.
What do you mean?
I know how to dress based off these cities I'm going to. If I'm going to a smaller community,
yes.
Let you and I both these pants I'm wearing, I don't wear them. And
I've for talked real?
To, no, I'm not. This is no spring
yeah,
chicken.
But in
I know
New York,
how to not get
in New
murdered.
York, you can wear whatever the
sure,
fuck
New
you
York
want.
Sure, New York is a tiny bubble.
Yeah.
Oh, when I go to Uganda, though.
You do a lot of you do a lot of shows there.
I do. I do a lot of work in Uganda.
There's a lot of places I guess you can't go and just be yourself.
Yeah. Hello.
Well, I know, but I never think like that. I never thought of that.
That's but because
I never
you
thought
say
of that,
you
my connection. My...
That's why you're not you, but you as a straight man. Your shit khakis and your oversized Gap shirt. That yeah. is a crown.
Shit khakis.
The crown.
Yes.
Your shit
because I never
that's,
have
trust
to
me. The gay
in.
Guy wearing the python is resisting freedom. That or not resisting freedom. That is fighting for freedom.
That's so fucking fascinating. I never thought that my connection in Dallas, I'd have to be wearing something different than I would wear onto
oh, yeah.
the place I was going.
Oh, yes. I've talked to... You yeah, must know
what I'm doesn't read everywhere.
No, this... No. And
really?
Barely here. But I was...
Barely here?
In this room.
This room. The chickens are
hostile.
Like, faggot.
Yeah.
But I was... talking to a bunch of friends, and we were going away for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and so we were all joking about how we have to, you know, not me because I live in Chicago, I'm from Chicago, but yeah. they were, you know, some from North Carolina, Virginia, and not to say that these places don't have liberal parts, but there's a lot of places that are not. So they were saying, oh, they have to change their clothes, can't wear this, can't wear that, blah blah blah.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah, so if you call Ari and tell him that that's not a freedom,
fucking
son of a bitch.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I never looked at it like that. I like when people show you another side. Like, there were these...
I'm like Dorothy's Bornak. I just...
We're very, very, very Dorothy from Golden Girls.
Yeah, I'm very, like, the half is glass. The glass is half empty. I'm a little fat.
Even lower than that. Yeah.
Golden Girls was such a great fucking show.
It's a brilliant show.
I mean...
It still reads today.
I was watching
there's
it on Hulu
references
all weekend.
That are dated, but the... Those ladies, those broads represent
also,
something
like,
that still plays.
Aside from everything, amazing actors. You do not find that kind of acting. I feel like everything today is just, I don't know, like, that. I don't know. They were allowed
Getty,
to read as actors back then.
Sophia Estelle Getty, yes.
Yeah. I remember the word came out and they're like, Estelle Getty's only 46.
Yeah,
we're like, what?
Yeah, they put on all those prosthetics and stuff. And then, you know, I relate to Dorothy the most. I think
a lot of gay guys too.
Yeah,
she's fed up.
Oh, that's
yeah,
so funny.
Fed up, she's down fed and out, up. Can't
yeah.
find a man.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
I related to
Blanche.
No, not Blanche
Betty White,
is the
Rose.
Whore. Betty,
Betty
Blanche
White, Rose.
Rose. Rose.
You oh you okay the nitwit?
Yep, I related
the
to
nitwit.
Her so
innocent,
much.
Maybe in a nicer way to say it.
Yeah,
the nitwit.
Well, she's like the idiot on the show.
Yeah,
she's like the sweetheart, and you know has the best heart, I guess. I guess I'd be more a mix of Sophia and Dorothy. This is gayer than the cum on a mustache.
Yeah. This, yeah, you found
a
it.
A podcast
found
about it. Golden Girls?
Talk,
by the way, that is
Alan
a brilliant...
Alan Scott does a podcast about Golden Girls. Who I did does? It. Alan, H. Allen Scott, I think it's... Yeah.
Use the bathroom.
Go use the bathroom. Right. Well, let me look at what time we have to go.
Yeah, what time you guys getting out of here? We've done a solid hour 18.
Is this interesting to you at all?
Are you kidding me?
Okay, so it says, oh, my call time's not till 2 p.m.
What are you doing today?
So I'm doing at midnight. Okay. So this says you're scheduled for at midnight, 2 p.m. call time. So that means I have to be there at 2, right?
Yeah.
Oh, then Pat and I can go get lunch. We'll do something. Yeah. We'll go get lunch or something.
What time is it now? So it's probably 11.
It's 11.
It's probably 11.
11:02. This is my Streisand poster, by the way. Me as Streisand at the Bulls. My friend Aaron made that for me.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't it great? I'm trying to embrace my love for Streisand. It's so funny because we're talking about being in middle school and stuff, and I'm still like, as much as I talk about it and as much as I like speak of it and make jokes of it, it's just so much like shame. Like I just feel like I go back to that 13-year-old self where I'm just living in a world of shame and self-doubt and sadness.
Really?
Yeah. Even just talking about like when I used to buy music so that I didn't even listen to, but in case someone came over, they would see that I listened to the music that everybody else bought.
Hold on. I did that too, by the way.
I know, but no, I had Streisand, the third album, like hidden under my bed because I used to love that album.
Yeah.
And just the fact that I can say I like Barbara Streisand and not like jokingly at all. Like I do. I love her. And I don't care if you make fun of me for it, but just the fact that I can say that out loud, I don't even think I could have imagined that. At 14 years old.
Really?
So yeah, that's like how far it's been. I was just talking to a friend of mine who came out of the closet recently, and I just, the way he was speaking, it showed how far I've come in terms of like accepting myself and who I am. And the way he was talking was just like the very first, a lot of times people come out of the closet, they're still trying to rationalize it, and you're still trying to sort of break down, you know, your whole life you've made this yourself, this like Frankenstein monster and bits and pieces of what you think society should think you are. And then when you have to start breaking that down and make it okay to see who you are and what's actually underneath that, it's hard to deal with. So I was talking to him and he was like, Pat, you know when people like come out of the, like I was talking about how far I've come for being out, like the fact that I could say like Streisand, I couldn't imagine when I was 14.
Oh, never.
You never, right? But, and I had a friend who's probably 30 now or almost 30 who just came out of the closet, and I'm seeing a lot of my 18-year-old like, self in him.
Show me some of that. Like what do you, like give me an example.
Just the way he was talking like, well, I'm trying to think of like, How do I word this, Pat? You know what I mean? Help me here. So you come out of the – when you came out of the closet versus now, what you know, and you see people who are freshly out of the closet, don't you see a lot of your younger self in them?
Sure, because you are – at least like when I came out at 20-something, I felt like I was 14. Like the whatever you might be feeling when you were like 12, 13, 14, trying to like be around – express your sexual self. It doesn't matter how old you are. If that's when you start, is this what you're talking about? You start, you kind of act like you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And
kind of immature about it and trying to be like, trying to rationalize his sexuality still. And for a while he was like, well, I still like women. I still like women. And like, are you fucking women? Well, no, I'm fucking men. I said, do you masturbate to women? Well, no, I masturbate to men. I said, okay. And then, of course, a few months later, I don't like women anymore. So it's trying to peel away the layers of the patriarch and accept who you are. But I like now I'm like, okay, it can be open. I don't care if I get called a faggot. I don't care if I look effeminate. I don't care if I say, like, Streisand. I don't care if I don't care about all these things. But when I was 18 and I first came out of the closet, oh, I cared. I was still gay, but trying to pretend I wasn't gay, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how.
Yeah, I hadn't come out yet, but a friend came out as bi, and he was telling two guys, me and another guy, who had not come out as anything. We're just kind of living neutered lives. And so we nodded as if though we support you. And then, you know, then he came out as gay, and then we came out as gay. It was just like this weird dynamic. We should have been fucking and just, or going out and get, but we're all being very careful, even around other people that were just like us, to not say too much.
Yeah, even when I came out to my cousin, who by the time I was 18, I knew my cousin was a full homosexual.
Full.
But just as gay as the day is long. And I said I was gay, and he didn't come out back to me. And I was furious because I was like, what the fuck? I was like, you're gayer than I am. You know, and then now we'll talk to each other today. I'm like, Brian, why didn't you say you were gay? He's like, I don't know. He's like, you know, when he came out, he did it very differently. He said, I'm gay, but everyone else tell everyone else. I don't feel like telling people. So the rest of the family had to be like, Brian's gay. And we're like, yeah, I know. I ran into my brother. My brother found out I was gay because I ran into him at a gay bar using a fake ID. Hydrate. I ran into him at Hydrate with a fake ID. Yes, I was 19 and he was 21. And the first thing he said is, when do you think Brian's going to come out? My cousin.
Shut up. So you ran into your brother at a gay bar and, uh-huh. and you didn't know he was gay?
I knew he was gay. He came out at 14. He didn't know I was out. I mean, he must have known I was gay.
Peeing on him in the troughs.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh.
And I said, Vince. Yeah. And
how much older is your brother than you?
2 years older.
Okay.
I'm 30. My sister's 31, and my brother's 32.
Sheesh.
And they're Irish twins.
Your dad definitely wasn't gay.
No. My dad definitely wasn't gay.
Yeah.
But my mom, you know, my dad's like a really boring American Irish like heritage person. Just like family is dry as toast. Just I think I saw his parents a total of 6 times growing up. I mean, they lived in California. Like he, yeah. But my mom is like this psycho Italian Mexican. Of her family, she's the most normal. But like they're all just having babies like rabbits. I mean, just so many babies. And such a juxtaposition of different. Like I could see the clear difference between cultures between my mother's family and my dad's family. Right. And I still don't even associate myself as a Lane. I can't even think of like Lane. Like what? My family's the Pomaros. Like that's who I grew up with. It's weird.
Is that your password for
that's for everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I live with 2 lesbians.
Tell us about that.
Bert, you don't need to help us with the shelves. We've got it.
The craziest part of my perspective was the comfortableness they had beating each other up. like a fight would often get physical. And I remember...
Where gays just sort of glare at each other across the room.
Yeah.
A lot of passive aggression, yeah.
Until they're drunk.
They would get high and we would get drunk. Everyone would do cocaine and I'd watch them fucking
scream at each other.
Go at it. And I remember one night I split them up.
God, and these lesbians were.
And I locked one in the room and then I fought the other one.
You need to call the police?
Oh, I fought the other one as she tried to get through me to beat the other one up.
They shouldn't have been dating.
And they broke up. But what's crazy is that one of them was a girl I probably still
was
love
Ellen
her.
DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres and who's
Portia de Rossi.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Ellen and Portia. And
I'm actually
heard here first.
I'm going to my one of my best friends who's a lesbian. It's the first gay wedding I'm going to is her wedding this summer.
Really?
And I'm so excited. Yeah, she's like her and her fiance are like some of the greatest people on the planet.
Oh, there were 2 lesbians that. At our that I know that we were at a party and they have a adopted son,
of course,
or maybe he's
and that's their third week of dating. They adopted him.
Oh yeah, they
and this and this kid is a fucking shit. He fucking hurts himself and one of the dads sees him. He's crying and the dad goes, "Hey buddy, you okay?" And he goes, "Leave me the fuck alone."
What?
And then went, "Whoa!" And the mom's like, "Give him some space." To me, and I went, bitch, neither of you deserve to have a child.
What kind of mother did you have? If you said that to your mother when you were growing up?
I get fucking smacked.
I actually think my body would have gone missing.
Yeah.
It would have gone.
You're raised by Madea. It sounds like something she would do.
I mean, what was your, if you swore like that, well, you had a very different.
If I swore to a stranger, I swore to a stranger the way that kid swore at that man.
I would be dead.
I said, I got really fucking enraged. And I said, that kid needs to get his dick knocked in the dirt a couple times because you can't walk around this world with that energy.
No.
That you're going to get really, get curb stomped one day.
The mom's not going to be there every time to say, give him some space.
Mm-hmm. And then my wife showed me the other side and they said, she goes, you know what? I think they adopted him from, it was in the foster system. And they're like, you know what? At least the kid, they're trying the best they can, Bert. And I was like, that's why I fucking love my wife. So I was like, here I am being an asshole. And my wife's like,
no, how old is the kid?
He's 10. Old enough to get punched.
Too old to be acting that way.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Care. Yeah, he was fucking...
If you're 10, and how long have you been living with these...
I don't know. I just... This was like...
If he did come from a system or an environment that was very abusive, those things are probably hard to get rid of.
Yeah, I'm thinking of...
You still wanna...
Do you think you'd ever have a kid?
Never.
Never?
No.
What about you?
Hells no.
Yeah. I can't imagine if I was gay that I would want that in my life.
Some do, and yeah. I think it's my friend Chris just had a baby, and he's going to be a great father.
No, my buddy,
I'm
going
to teach my kid about the bees and the bees. But I know I'm too selfish. Though that being said, I think I'd be a good father. I used to teach art camp, and all my mom and my aunt's instincts raising me came out as a kid, and I was very good with these kids, and I would be a great father, and I get mad
great
at I'd be a wonderful mother.
My second,
I'm Pat's mother. Pat's relationship with his family and his mom is the most fascinating thing in the world.
Omaha, Nebraska.
I'm there in a week.
Where are you going?
I'm at the Funny Bone.
I once got snuck into the Funny Bone. My brother was dating a gal that worked there, and I was 16. And Elaine Boozler was there, and my mother was shocked that I was gay, that I went
to go see Elaine Boozler
twice. Instead of going to homecoming, she went to perform live there, and then she was at the Funny Bone. So my brother's girlfriend snuck me in, and I remember her looking out in the audience like,
to Elaine Boozler, mom, come on.
Like, see you later. He's got to be straight, right? But anyway, I was waiting for, I could see Elaine see me because I was like, I weighed like 120. I was 16, had braces, and and everybody else there was an adult. And then at the end, I met her at the door with a flower instead of rose for you, Miss Boozler. So the Funny Bone you're going to has history.
You just broke my heart.
Oh, it was, she follows him on Twitter now.
Because I wrote that note to her. And so she very kindly then followed me. But I just like, my mother, you're gay? Like, but yeah, my favorite comic was Elaine Boozler. Like, I'm like, she's on Night Court. We've got to watch it. She's on Night Court, mom.
That's so fucking hilarious.
He just loves women. He loves her.
So how long have you been doing your podcast? 12 years?
12 years, yes.
And you started, it's you and another guy?
Two guys? Yep.
And
the P, the N, and the S are Patrick Noah Scott.
Okay.
But then it sounds like penis.
Yeah, it does.
It does. But you're going to my Funny Bone. That's wonderful. The Omaha Funny Bone.
Yeah, yeah.
Herstory there.
I love that place. Adam Devine is from Omaha.
Yes.
And so he usually, every time I've been in Omaha, he's been around. And he had a high school reunion one time. And he was like, hey, can I stop by and do a set? I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, can you tell some people you'll be there so help sell some tickets?
Who is this again?
Adam Devine, you were on the show.
Oh, Adam Devine. I love Adam Devine.
He's great.
He's so great. We were in Bonnaroo last year together, and so I was in I was talking to him. I did his show, but then I was talking to him.
The house party?
Yeah, the house party. And so I of course, see him, and at that time, him and Zac Efron had just been he was just like in the newspaper for making a joke about Zac Efron's boner. He like was joking that he'd seen Zac's boner, and of course it was all over the gay blogs, and all these pictures of them in singlets were all over the gay blogs because I guess they did it in like a movie or something. So I was like, Adam, I'm like, you know that every gay man on the face of the planet is looking at pictures of you and Zach in singlets, and it's over like every single gay everything. He's like, really? I was like, yes. And another thing too is what Mark Norman, by the way, was on Instagram. There's always like,
he's gay?
No. But
you heard it here first.
There's always Man Crush Mondays or whatever, and he was on this gay, really famous gay page, and it was like six pictures of Mark, one with his butt out, one of him in his underwear, and it's like, Man Crush Monday, Mark Norman. And so I sent it to Mark, and I was like, look, Mark, I'm like, you've made it. You're with the gays now. And he's like, I'll take it.
He's sexy.
I think Mark's, I do very high. I 100% understand people wanting to fuck Mark.
Who the fuck is this?
And Adam Devine.
Yeah, Adam's very cute.
I pick him over Zac Efron any day.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
But only because I'm self-hating and I want to go for the...
I normally
am those
too, but
jacked muscles and stuff. I think I'd be more interested to see...
Fuck.
Do you have to go?
No. Oh, shit. I should have told my wife.
Uh-oh.
I signed my wife up for a podcast that's going to be here in a couple minutes.
Oh, well, we can wrap this up.
No.
Because, Pat, we're going to get lunch.
Yeah.
We don't have to be anywhere until 2, so we can get lunch.
That's perfect. That was an hour 30. That's a good length of a podcast.
That's like...
I like to do them. I like them to be over an hour. I think you start really getting into good conversation.
Do you edit?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, perfect. And your fans will listen to this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. This is
good for them.
This is what, this is this kind of stuff that makes podcasts interesting. Like, if we didn't have
nothing was rushed.
No, it's just a really great conversation about people. That's it.
Agreed.
People.
So your episode airs Wednesday night?
Oh, good. Then they could see my Streisand show in Streisand of the Bonsoir at Pangea.
No.
April 26th.
April 26th.
The Comedy Jam.
It's April 26th?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fucking amazing. You guys got to tune into that. And then you're going to be doing Mateo at the Bonsoir?
Mm-hmm. March 24th.
So, guys, go out and see that.
And I'm doing Battle of the Divas March 28th at Union Hall, where we have Bob the Drag Queen and Sashir Zameda battle in a debate
Zameda.
She's on SNL. You just met her the other night. She was at the show. And we have them battle in a debate, a giant debate over who's better, Whitney Houston or Mariah Carey.
Who would you pick? Just a knee-jerk reaction?
Whitney Houston, no questions asked.
Most people do knee-jerk reaction, but then when you watch Mariah in like 95, then it becomes a real...
She was very talented, Mariah, but Whitney...
Whitney
she brings
was...
it all. She, the wigs, the sweat, the voice, you know, for a good spell of her career, the drama.
Will everyone please follow Pat Powers on Twitter.
I'm going to check out your podcast. What's the name of it again?
PNS Explosion.
PNS Explosion. And I'm going to follow that. I like getting into new podcasts. I just listened to Joe List and Mark Norman's
Tuesday with Stories. It's so good.
It's tough to listen to.
Pat,
kidding.
Your name on Twitter, if you can't,
Pat Powers.
There's a bunch of Pat Powers, though. So is it one word?
It's just at Pat Powers.
It's a picture of Angela Lansbury on the phone.
Where do you do your podcast out of?
Chicago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe next time I'm in Chicago, I could be on your podcast.
I'd love it.
That'd be fucking awesome. Gentlemen, PNS Explosion. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
What's a good one to start with?
Rageaholic. It's like a few ones down.
I had a lot of anger at that point. But
it Rageaholic?
Is, yeah, yes. It might be a little too intense.
Nope. It is perfect. Awesome. It's my favorite episode of PNS Explosion.
Thank you.
There's also one they interviewed a man who lived in Saudi Arabia or Syria?
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. And he was closeted in Saudi Arabia and had like a family but was gay, and they came on the show. They grilled him about
it.
Trust me, it's wild.
House,
it's uncomfortable.
Your house is so lovely.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us over.
Don't mention it. I can't wait to introduce you guys to my wife. So, hey, thank you for doing this.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.